Welcome back to Ever Ancient, Ever New, where we plumb the depths of the beauty in the Christian faith. I'm your host, Father Kyle Kowalczyk, with Jeremy Darling, as always. This is a podcast of the Church of St. Maximilian Kolbe in Delano, Minnesota. We're sponsored by the Catholic or the Foresters. Jeremy, what's better, a bad Catholic or a good Protestant?
You know, we're going to answer that question on July 26th at Lupine Brewery. I think I know what the answer is.
But you'll have to wait to find out. So come join us for the live show. 6:30, doors open. Free beer if you sign up early. Yeah. Check the parish website or Catholic Order of Foresters for more information.
We've done these before. They are a lot of fun. And yeah, they usually end up on YouTube. We usually film them.
You know, I think we do better when we have beer. Maybe we should just start. But we're recording here at like 8 o'clock in the morning.
I would love that. I will say I'm not a fan of beer. I'm more of a bourbon whiskey kind of guy. That I can, beer to me is such a commitment. There's so much of it that I have to drink. And I prefer, I'm trying to slow down. So I realized years ago that I walked too fast and I was always in a hurry. And so I'm trying to slow down and
slow
do
down
things that force me to
drink bourbon.
Slow down. So a little bourbon. And they don't have to pee, and I haven't got so many calories, you know. But they don't have bourbon at Lupine. I do imbibe on a beer there. I like sours or lagers, mostly because they're sweet. that's how I roll. Okay, there is probably one thing in all of Catholic theology that is still cloudy to me.
Only one thing? Wow, that's only, you've caught up a lot in the last 2 years.
I should say, to what I am aware of, I have read an excessive amount, and I listen to essays all the time and podcasts, things like that. But there is one thing that has still remained somewhat cloudy to me, and that is annulments.
Oh, yeah. Well, you and the other 2 billion members of the Catholic Church.
And so we, obviously, the sex revolution unleashed all hell on earth. My opinion is it is the bloodiest revolution in all of human history. And from the sex revolution, we got abortion, we got divorce on demand, fatherless homes, reckless, hardcore, violent pornography, which is a plague on all of the earth. Sometime we'll do an episode around pornography. I mean, just an all-out assault on the body. And I heard a great phrase, and I don't remember who it was from, but what is common, so we have this word called sacred. I understood that word. My dad would say it all the time, nothing is sacred anymore. And I knew intrinsically that meant sort of set apart as special, right? And when we talk about sacred and common, there's sacred, there's common. But what is common is eventually profaned, okay? I like shoes. I don't have hobbies. I don't hunt. I don't fish. I don't golf. I don't have a workshop, but if I have a little money, I'll buy a pair of shoes. And not like name brand shoes. It's always got to be, and I buy everything on sale, or I got to have some coupon. I have weird rules around it, but I take good care of my shoes. But you walk around in shoes, and they get profaned instantly. No matter how much I might like the shoe, it's profaned instantly the moment it touches the floor.
Especially if it's white.
Especially if it's white. So out of the sex revolution, we saw, I think, the most prolific and fastest profanation of like everything. 50 years in history is just a blink of an eye. But you got 65, 70 million babies dead, depending on how you count. And fatherlessness is just a blight on society. And divorce in particular, now marriage is just expendable. Marriage is no longer sacred. It's just, right, I can bounce.
I saw the statistic again the other day. I mean, like, marriages in the last 50 years since 1970 are down, in, I think in the Catholic Church, 70%, 67.7% or something like that.
Yeah, that's actually really bad.
That's
for a whole number
really
of reasons.
Really bad.
For the future and for faith and all these things. But this is what the sexual revolution has wrought. So now we have within the Catholic Church, we've always had annulments.
Right.
Okay, but it's the last 50 years, thanks to the sexual revolution, this has become much more common.
Sure.
So I think it's helpful to kind of explain in layman terms what it is and what it's not, and then potentially we can maybe broach the topic of, you know, how does this affect Protestant marriages, right? We didn't have any traditions. We did. We didn't call them traditions.
All right. So yeah, let's dive in first, and then we can get to specifics.
Yeah.
So I was asked this question one time. So I was helping out at a parish. We had a 3-week assignment in seminary. My first year in seminary, I believe. And I was assigned to a parish, and the priest asked me to help out with RCIA because he couldn't be there. And so I was going to teach the lesson on marriage. And at the end of it, I said, are there any questions? And this woman raised her. Oh, no. She asked me this privately. She said, so I have a question. So I was married very young. We were both drunk when we got married. I grew up Catholic. As soon as I got married, my husband started beating me. There's a lot of Jeez. Verbal abuse. Jeez. There was we weren't practicing our faith. I mean, it went on and on and on. I thought she was going to say, "Is that a valid marriage? Should I get an annulment or something?" But then she said, "So now I'm remarried. Can I receive Holy Communion?" And I was like, "Oh man, there's just like layer upon layer upon layer." Now here, I think we get to part of the difficulties. We sometimes think that marriage is or annulment is either just Catholic divorce,
right?
You know, that like, yeah, I want a divorce. We don't call it divorce as Catholics. We call it annulment. So I'm going to get that instead. In the misconception is that other things. So this woman, like, he was abusive to me. That sucks.
Yeah.
That's bad.
Yeah.
That's not good. If you're in a situation like that, you're being abused, you should get out of that situation.
Yeah.
The church wouldn't say, well, no, you made your bed, you got to lie in it.
Yeah.
No, you need to get out of that situation. You have kids, you definitely got to get out of that situation, get them out of the situation. But annulment doesn't have to do with what happens 5, 6, 7 years later. Well, he cheated on me, had an affair. Like, okay, what's your point? She got really cranky and she stopped talking to me and she won't sleep with me anymore. I'm like, okay, what's your point? Like, so I think there's a lot of misconception about even what annulment is, what it means.
Right.
Do you know?
No. Well, so what I would say is it's how it's been explained to me in the past, at least things I've read, is it's sort of recognizing that something was never existed in the first place.
Right. Yeah. The proper way to say it is like you're applying for a declaration of nullity, which you're declaring that nothing happened at that point.
Yeah.
But what point?
Right. That's sort of the question.
Right.
That I don't understand.
Yeah. So then I think we got to go back to like, well, what constitutes marriage? What is marriage? We can even, let's start in the civil level. Okay. Let's like just leave, church out of this for a moment. So like we live in the state of Minnesota. You're having a party with some friends and then your niece and nephew, they're 10 years old and they do a little marriage ceremony.
That's not a valid marriage.
Why not?
they're kids. I'm guessing they're kids.
They're not old enough. Yeah. And Minnesota has rules on how old you have to be to be married. And so let's say everybody else in the community was like, oh, that's great. They got married when they're 10 and, you know, they helped them and then at some point they wanted to apply for, you know, their tax break for being, whatever.
Yeah. And nope, you were kids.
And they're like, no, that's not actually a valid marriage.
Right.
We're declaring that whatever you did there, no matter how real that ceremony looked, even if you had a valid minister there, that's an invalid ceremony. We do not count that.
Yep. So even the world recognizes validity and non-validity.
So that's just on the civil level, right? I mean, let's take it to, you know, let's say to adults, same thing. Two adults get together, they're having a party, and everybody knows that they love each other. They're sitting in the living room, and they invite everybody over, and they said, the reason why we wanted you to be here is because we wanted to declare our commitment to one another publicly in front of witnesses, and so I take you, and you take me, for better or worse, et cetera, and they kiss. And then they start living together as they're married. Is that a valid marriage?
No.
Why?
Well, this is where things get really weird. To me, someone has to officiate. Someone with authority has had to have officiated as the authoritative officiative witness.
Yeah. So in the state of Minnesota, and probably most states, like, you have to have a valid officiant or minister. And basically, I mean, anybody can get one of these. But in this particular scenario, nobody had one. So, sorry, invalid marriage. So they go to get their marriage license or get their name change or whatever they do after that. And they're like, oh, sorry, this isn't a valid marriage. That doesn't count. Well, what do you mean? And it doesn't matter if they go the next week or if they go 20 years from then. Or let's make it really, really complicated. Take that same scenario and fast forward 20 years. They've been living like they're married for 20 years. And then things go bad. They want a divorce. She wants half of everything. They go to the state and they're like, sorry, you have no legal claim because there is no binding union that the state recognizes.
Interesting. Right?
Right. So that's a invalidity. There is no decree of divorce because the state didn't recognize that.
Yeah.
So we see this even on the state level.
Yep.
Right. So what the church is looking for, now the way that church weddings have happened has varied through the centuries as well. There was a time when they said, hey, you just get married however, the Romans get married, and then you go to the priest later and the priest gives you the nuptial blessing or something. Hmm. But strictly speaking, there was no marriage ceremony. Now, as things evolve and different places do different things, the church has evolved the requirements for marriage. So as a Catholic, you're required to get married the way that the church requires you to get married. So that means get married in a church by a validly ordained minister with two witnesses. All right, so that's what we'd call canonical form. So same thing, like, well, we got married outside at the beach by my cousin who is registered in the state of California. Well, so you weren't in a church, you didn't have a minister. Sorry, that's not, the church doesn't recognize that as a valid marriage, even if the state does. So there's where we get to canonical form. So this,
right.
This is a lot of people run into this, like, yeah, we got married. We're in a period in our faith where we were away from the church. We got married and find out it's not valid. It wasn't recognized by the church.
Yes. Okay. So we have civil, we have canonical, and now we have the mushy middle of Protestant weddings. Right.
Right. So the church, Catholic Church, recognizes Protestant weddings. So we don't bind Protestants to get married the way that Catholics are bound to get married. So if in your non-denominational Protestant denomination, you just have a ceremony at your church and that's good enough for your congregation, then the Catholic Church would recognize that. And so if those people ended up converting and becoming Catholic, you don't have to get remarried. You're validly married.
Yeah. So this was,
which I mean, this causes all sorts of, the bigger conundrum I think is like, well, how come I can go to my Protestant friend's marriage, but then I can go to my Lutheran friend's marriage, but my fallen away Catholic friend, I can't go to his marriage because his is invalid.
Yeah.
Or he left the church and he's a very devout Protestant, but his marriage would be invalid because he's still Catholic and bound to get married the way that Catholics get married. This is a conundrum.
There's the complication. Right?
There's the complication. And so strictly speaking, we're only talking about lack of form right now. This is what it's called,
right?
Lack of form. I didn't get married in the form, the canonical form, the rule that the church has given to us.
And this is that word form is very important. Everything has to have a shape and a form. where there is no shape or form is just chaos.
Chaos, right? I mean, this is the beginning of Genesis, right? Before the Lord formed the world, it was chaos, mass, and, you know, it's like...
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
So what are the three requirements for a valid marriage, you know?
In like Catholic marriage or just in general?
I mean, this I think Catholic, we would say that this is not just a Catholic thing. This is what marriage is.
Well, you have to have two consenting parties.
Right. So a man and a woman who are free to consent to it. So one of the questions we ask, have you come here freely without reservation to enter into this union?
Yeah. So we have to have two. And then I think you have to have knowledge. You can't have a person who might be consenting but not know what they're consenting to.
Right. I think this would kind of fall under freedom. So, I mean, there's an easy one, right? Like, you're completely drunk the day of your wedding. You wake up the next morning and are like, what happened?
Yeah.
Are you validly married?
No.
But you were married in a church in front of a minister with two witnesses. That's canonical form.
Yeah.
But you didn't have the proper faculties to be able to do it.
Right.
So we would say in that situation, obviously you go to the church and say, I think this is, they would say that's null. That's void. That doesn't count.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Or, you know, maybe a person consented, but they did so under some kind of coercion.
Right. Yeah. Right. So the classic shotgun wedding, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you got my girl pregnant. You're going to marry her. Or I'm going to shoot you in the head.
Yeah, that's not really consent.
Right. There's fear, coercion, you know, like, yeah, that would be nullable.
Yeah. Okay. So, and then is that three?
So the questions that would be asked, questions about freedom, that's important. So fidelity, are you in this for, this one person, you know? So if you have in your eye, see, this is where it gets complicated. Like if in my head I'm like, yeah, I'm marrying Sally, but I'm still going to get together with Susie on the weekends.
Yeah, yikes.
It's like, if I don't have this idea of radical singularity for the person I'm marrying, then it's actually not true marriage.
Monogamy is required.
It's required. Permanence. If I'm getting married without the idea of permanence, then I'm actually not getting married.
Yeah.
You know, so this gets into the essence of what marriage is. If at the moment of consent, you're thinking, yeah, I'm on a 5 years. I think I can do this for 5 years and then I'll reevaluate. That's not actually marriage.
Right.
It's not enough. You're not consigning to what, that's just a long-term roommate relationship.
Right.
You know?
And so these are the things that a priest would sit down with a couple and ascertain when a request for an annulment is made.
Yeah, right. Well, these are the things we ask beforehand,
right,
too.
Right.
So, but when, and then the other one is openness to life. So those who are, able... you know, like, are you open to children? Because marriage exists for children. This is natural law. Like,
right,
this is why marriage exists, so that that children grow up in a home with a mom and a dad who protect and nurture. And
the family.
Family is the same. So if we're getting married and say, no, we're never going to have children. We're going to make sure we never have children. That doesn't mean like the impossibility of having children. We're too old to have children. Or even in the situation where somebody had, you know, been sterilized before, you know, they confessed it and now they want to get married. But if the couple is like, nope, we're not. We're going to contracept. We're going to make sure that we never have children. They're not open to life. Well, that's not marriage.
Right.
Marriage is necessarily open to life.
Right.
So in an annulment, the process, you're going back and looking at that moment of consent.
Right.
That's when marriage happened. So if we were open to life, we didn't have children, and then at some point we both got sterilized, well, that doesn't change the moment of consent.
Right.
That the wedding ceremony, the moment where you said, I do, for better or for worse, for rich or poor, death or do us part, that's the moment we're talking about.
Right.
Only that moment.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so this leads to some other interesting questions. We, as evangelicals, didn't have what we would consider tradition. We certainly did. We did things the same way for a long time. That's tradition. We also wore wedding rings, in spite of them being nowhere in Scripture and very much a Roman thing. We also didn't have, there was no form in Scripture for a wedding ceremony. Mm-hmm. There's none. But we followed a very specific form. Now, when I was, like, before I even reached the age of 7, I think I was a ring bearer in, like, 7 weddings or something like that.
Wow.
Me and my sister, we were, like, in all the little weddings our church down in Iowa. And you had a very specific process. This is when the ring bearer and the flower girl come down, and this is when the...
And most of that stuff isn't even religious. It's just how Americans...
Correct. At some point, ceremony was created that we've all followed very strictly.
And even in the Catholic ceremony, a lot of it is just like, well, this is how we do it in America. And there is a... Because the sacrament is based on a natural institution... There's kind of like more freedom in it to...
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
So there's something new that I didn't know. And so we didn't, you know, in terms of like what has to be said, we recognized that, you know, my wife and I, we couldn't just walk up to a group of people and declare ourselves married. Right. And there had to be, certainly for this, the civil laws, there had to be a, you know, something had to be signed by the pastor that officiated and all of that stuff. And we had to sign it to you and we had to send it in.
Right. And like most pastors, I am registered in the state of Minnesota, the county of Ramsey, to officiate weddings that are recognized by the state.
Right.
Right. Which is a separate thing than recognized by the church, but I'm also the guy who recognizes it for the church.
Right.
Yeah.
It's funny how that works. So this again is a great lesson in how the church has to operate through time with different civic authorities at different points in history, different places on earth. The church has had to get along with civic authorities.
Right.
And we even see how God has implemented, whether they were always righteous or not, certain civic authorities to help run things. And it starts with the family, which is so ironic how tied the civic life is to marriage, because the family is the core, it's the center of society, is a family, and the community that grows out from those families. This is why the devil has attacked the family so hard all through history, but in particular the last 50 years, post-sexual revolution. So we didn't have traditions, but we would recognize there's a way you have to go about it.
Mm-hmm.
And very much meaning, in other words, we have traditions.
And probably if you're pushed on it, you know, there's something that marriage means, you know? So if a couple were to say, we want to get married and be married for the next 2 years, your dad, the pastor, probably would have been like, that's not what marriage is.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
Right. Correct.
I'm not going to preside over that.
So how about another scenario that you probably already covered, but I'm just putting the pieces together. Two people, non-Christians. Okay. Like they're both agnostic.
Not baptized.
They both get married in an official ceremony. Let's just say for the sake of the conversation, it was in front of a judge.
Mm-hmm.
He officiated, they were married, they consented, and they had kids.
Mm-hmm.
They did all of that stuff. And then they both find Jesus and decide to become Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
Are they then remarried in the church?
No. Once they get baptized, their natural union is sacramentalized.
Gotcha. See, that's what I thought.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's kind of beautiful. I mean, this is the only sacrament that works that way.
It transcends.
Yeah.
It's a transcendent. I mean, they're all transcendent in that way, but there's something about marriage.
Right.
That you look at the first marriage. Okay, Adam and Eve had no official ceremony. Do you know what I mean?
Well, they started as one flesh, so I think it was easier to call it. Yeah. But and that's why I think there's so much it's so complicated because, there is natural marriage and there is Christian marriage. And so your marriage, you got married as a Protestant,
yep,
and you have a valid sacramental marriage.
Yep.
When you came into the church, you didn't have to do anything. You still are in a valid sacramental marriage.
Yeah.
If Gretchen comes into the church, still you don't have to do anything. You're still in a valid sacramental marriage.
Right.
So let's get back to the question of annulment, because again, oftentimes when people come to me in like marriage difficulties, and this is in the back of their mind, like, oh, if I get a divorce, am I going to be able to get an annulment? And they start thinking of, you know, the things that, well, he was abusive and he was addicted and he was whatever, or she was cheating on me, or whatever the situation is. And I say, no, that stinks. I'm sorry you've had to deal with that. None of that has to do with annulment,
right,
necessarily.
Right.
So again, what we're looking for at annulment is, okay, so I'm going to add, you come in and so you got divorced. You're asking for an annulment. I'm going to ask these questions like, okay, when you got married, were you Catholic? Right. If you say yes, and I say, did you get married in a church? You say, no. I say, all right, well, that's lack of form. You had to get married in church. That's an invalid marriage. All right. And so then we have to walk through the process. The church has to declare. I don't get to go. I don't get to say as the pastor, like, oh, great, you're good. You can receive communion again. Or you can get married again or whatever. By the way, if somebody's divorced and they've confessed whatever fault they have in that, you can't just get divorced because you're tired,
right,
of your spouse.
Right.
But I mean, there might be no fault in it on your part. There might be. But if being divorced does not prohibit somebody from communion.
Right.
Divorce and remarriage is the problem, because that's the one Jesus said you're committing adultery.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Let me paint the scenario then here too, okay? So in that, we have someone, let's say, that is, for the most part, oh, there's a little, that's a stressful ringtone.
Yeah.
There's a guy that comes into the church. Let's say wife had an affair, initiated the divorce, nothing he could do. Okay. But everything was valid. You go through the whole annulment thing and there's nothing there.
Right.
Right. He is now celibate.
Right. Yeah, he's still validly married to somebody who he's legally
even though she's
divorced
sleeping
from
with somebody else.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So that is again a great cost.
It's the cost of discipleship. Jesus did not say it was going to be easy. He did not say marriage was going to be easy. Yeah. Actually, when the apostles asked him about marriage and he told them the answer, they said, "Well, it's better for us not to get married." And he's like, "Yeah, basically."
Yeah, it's true.
So, yeah. So here, you know. Yeah, it's, yeah, so at any rate, lack of form in a certain sense is the easy one. I was Catholic, I got married outside of the church. Okay, annulment. It's technically different, but yes, that was not a valid union. But then once you get into the other things, like, okay, there was some fear, or there was some coercion, or there was some lack of knowledge. Well, how much? How much does there have to be? I didn't realize that marriage was quite forever, or I didn't realize that, and like, it just gets so.
And this only relates, so let's say in this situation, you have two coming, you have one coming in.
Right. You could have one
person coming in. If it was his spouse in this case that had lack of knowledge or lack of consent.
Right. Yeah. That's the trust that you have coming to the altar. It's like, I'm trusting that this person is all in. Well, maybe they were lying.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they like, no, actually I'd never wanted to have children and I've been on the birth control pill for our entire marriage. You're like, what?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, that's happened.
Yeah. These things do happen.
That's an annulment then. Yes.
That could be an annulment.
Okay.
Yeah. If one of the party was hiding, withholding something.
And listeners, beware. I know people that work here at the Archdiocese that are part of the investigative team. That, I mean, that's got to be a hard job.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you got to have a heart to do that.
And you got to ask people beforehand, afterhand, like, well, did you have any hint of this? Like, oh yeah, she always said she never wanted to have children, or this one, like, oh, I remember her saying, like, if I don't get married to Bob, then, you know, I mean, what would people think after we've been dating for so long, and I'm getting older, and like, this is, it's now or never. I'm just like there's some duress there.
Yeah.
You know, like, how much is too much? I don't know. I'm so glad I don't have to make those decisions or those investigations.
Yeah.
But that's the type of thing. Like, it's not just a shotgun pointed at you, but it could be some moral thing. You go to the pastor and say, I don't think I should marry her. I'm and it's not just cold feet, like I'm just getting nervous. It's like, I really, this is a bad idea. I can't do this. And he's like, no, you have to. You've already committed to this, and everybody's going to be disappointed in you. You're going to have to rescind all your invitations. You're going to send your grandma to the grave. You know, if you don't go through with this marriage, then...
Yes, okay. So like, that's not really consenting. That's coercion.
Right. So, like, at what point does it become coercion? You know, immaturity, you know, mental health. Is somebody able to make the consent?
Yeah,
you look into it and find that, no, actually they had severe, you know, a severe mental inability.
They were bipolar or something like that.
Yeah,
okay, so
that could, I'm not saying that does.
Yeah, that could come into the conversation.
Right.
So do you have a theory? I've heard it's much easier now to get an annulment than ever before, and that it's happening a lot. I don't actually know if that's true or not. If it is, do you have a theory on why?
I mean, it certainly might be true. People might lie. I mean, you could certainly lie and say, oh, yeah, at the moment of consent, I had my fingers crossed.
Interesting. Sure.
But, you know, and I think Pope Francis has alluded to this before, but you know, the state of marriage... You know, 100 years ago, growing up, you're like, oh yeah, I know what marriage is. It's a man and a woman, lifelong union, open to life. You know, me and her for the rest of our days.
Yeah, regardless if you're Catholic or not.
Right, and so you just kind of knew what marriage was. Well, now, I mean, you're growing up, you know, my niece and nephew are growing up in a divorced household, splitting houses. Each of their parents are dating somebody else. Nice. And at least one of their grandparents were divorced too. So it's like, yeah, some people get married for 5 years and some people get married for 10 years and some for 20 years. And some seem to do it for a long time, but like we're just eroded, and now the states have been saying...
So there's, you know, just a lot more invalid marriages coming into the church.
It could be. Yeah. It could be. And I don't want people to start doubting, like, maybe I'm invalidly married. You know, we assume that you're married unless otherwise proven. And that goes to, you know, there's also a misnomer. Well, I don't get annulment because then my children are bastards. Like, well, that's not the case either, because these qualifications are based on what I actually know and am capable of and aware of. And
right.
So it's a big mess, and we could probably talk another 3 hours
about it. Let's all commit to pray for marriage and the restoration of marriage.
Oh, yeah. You know, we'll end on this. I just remember Scott Hahn wrote a book, and I heard him say it again recently, that a professor of his in doctoral studies was talking about marriage, and all of a sudden he kind of stopped and said, you know, if we just lived the authenticity of Catholic marriage for one generation, we'd transform the world.
Yeah, amen. Amen. I agree 100%.
So,
and maybe the end of Roe v. Wade will help spur some conversations around that. God help us.
God help us.
Lord have mercy. We'll see you next time, guys. At Catholic Order of Foresters, we're committed to bringing Catholic values to life and financially protecting Catholic families right here in Minnesota. Our members enjoy benefits like scholarship eligibility and peace of mind knowing their family is secure, even if something happens to them. Each year, thousands join us to support people in need through our Feeding God's Children events, spirituality tap-ins, and mission trips. Wouldn't you love to be a part of an organization that embodies your Catholic values? Find out how you can be a part of Catholic Order of Foresters by calling General Agent Brian Marketon at 763-658-4009. That's Brian at 763-658-4009.